This is Forum. I'm John Michaels, Public Affairs Radio Director, speaking with John Williams, a family member, Penny Hall, a volunteer, Wendy Gibbink, Executive Director of NAMI, N-A-M-I. And first of all, who wants to tell me what N-A-M-I stands for?
NAMI stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we are the South Dakota chapter of the national organization. And we have 9 local affiliates in South Dakota.
Well, 9 local affiliates, and there's a national network, too.
Uh-huh, there is.
Well, tell us on Saturday, May 17th, first of all, let's talk about that because the if people really want to know more about it. They can come out to your walk, Walking for Mental Health, coming up on Saturday, May 17th. Tell us about that, and then we'll come back and talk about it again.
Okay. The NAMI Walk is our signature event. It's our one and only fundraiser, and it's also the largest mental health awareness activity in the state of South Dakota. We do this every month in May because it's Mental Health Awareness Month. So we are walking this year at Saratoma Park on the 17th of May. It's a Saturday morning. We're asking people to come out about 8:30 and check in. The walk starts at 9:30 promptly, and we will have the walk done around 10:30, so you still have time to enjoy the rest of your day or if you have graduation activities or things like that. We really want you to come out and be with us on Saturday morning, the 17th.
Well, mental health is sometimes misunderstood more than it is understood. I always felt that to be a disc jockey on the radio, you got to be schizophrenic. Because you're two different people, you know. The person you are at home is different than the person, you're a different person on the mic, you know, in anyone in entertainment. And paranoid, because you're always worried about, well, is somebody else out for my job, you know? Or in a sense, that's real. Anxiety in the entertainment business is really high. Naomi Judd, I think, has written a very, very good book for anyone that wants to know more about anxiety. She couldn't get out of bed. It was that bad for her. And she's written a very good book on it. But that part of that anxiety is also what makes you a good actor, makes you a good performer, makes you a good singer. There's two sides to every coin on that. But how do you define mental health? I guess maybe start with you, Wendy.
Well, mental health is more than just the absence of illness. Mental health would be wellness. There's no cure for mental illness. Mental illnesses are chronic disorders, but people can learn to live with their disorders in a very full and fulfilling way. And so mental health would incorporate all the parts of your life, social and, you know, your family and your work and also your physical aspects of your life, everything kind of coming together in a wellness circle, if you will.
Defining what normal is not easy. Some people don't want to do what everybody else does.
Right.
It swings one way and then pendulum swings the other.
Yeah, and there's a continuum too. I mean, if you look at mental illness, there are people who are, you know, maybe have some very mild symptoms that they experience once in a while, some depression or some anxiety only in certain circumstances. And then all the way on the other end of the spectrum would be people who live with symptoms, very severe symptoms every day, and it seriously impacts their life and how they live it. And most people fall somewhere in the middle there. You know, 1 in 4 Americans, 1 in 4 people worldwide actually lives with a mental illness. 1 in 4 adults and 1 in 10 children. So that's an awful lot of people. And keep in mind, those are only the people that are diagnosed.
What is the definition by insurance? In other words, when does it become official that the government recognizes this is something that you need medication for or whichever so that you can get it on your Medicaid or Medicare or Social
right.
Security, whatever?
Right. Well, every so often they update the diagnostic criteria in a very big, thick book called the DSM, and they're on the 5th edition of that now. It was just released last year, and that lists all the criteria, all the symptomology for each one of the disorders that are considered a mental illness, and, of course, those then you can bill insurance for. It's very complicated, way more than I can even begin to understand. I'm not a psychiatrist.
Well, I went through a divorce back in the early 80s. And I remember at the Sioux Falls Library picking up a book on divorce, on South Dakota law. And this is a fact. Back in the 1950s, if the wife wanted to get divorced, the husband could declare her mentally, they could actually put her in an institution for doing that. We've come a long way since then. Penny, you're a volunteer for NAMI. Well, tell us why you volunteer for NAMI.
I volunteer for NAMI because it gives me a voice. I live with bipolar disorder, and I get out and tell my story, and in our own voice presentations, I go out and tell people what it's like living with a mental illness. And then I also co-facilitate a NAMI Connection support group meeting. We have 3 meetings per week, and I co-facilitate one of those.
And John, we were talking before we came in for the program that your father was kind of a pioneer. You grew up as a kid with your father back at a time when they didn't know what bipolar was.
That's true. Dad wasn't diagnosed until he was in his early 30s with bipolar disorder, and this was back in the 70s. And I remember him being very erratic as a child. I remember him having what they then termed as a psychotic break, where he lost touch with reality and had to be hospitalized for an extended period of time. At that point, we started to understand what mental illness was and what bipolar was, but just to remind people, that was back in the mid-70s, and so people didn't talk about those illnesses back then. In fact, we've still got a ways to go when we talk about mental illness. It's not a shameful thing. Our family went through a lot of pain trying to understand what was going on with Dad, trying to get him the help he needed. He's lived with bipolar all of his life. He has severe depression where he can't get out of bed, and then he will have manic episodes where he is incredibly agitated. He will disappear on us. He won't sleep for days at a time. And you know, a lot of these things can be regulated with medications, but there's a issue with people with bipolar that they don't always like being on their medication because it doesn't make them feel good.
I've heard people describe it as kind of like swimming through concrete when they're on medication, and quite often if you're watching Law and Order, whichever, the guy did it because he was off his meds, you know, that type of thing.
I'd like to just insert something there. Yeah. You know, that is a really common misconception about psychiatric medication that, you know, that sometimes prevents people from wanting to take medication because they've heard bad things about it. But the reality is that the medications have changed a lot. Even in just the last few years, we have more medication choices than ever before, and brand new medications that act differently than some of the old ones. And the other thing to remember is that every person's response to medication is different. You know, the statistics tell us that people who receive treatment for mental illness, up to 90% of people actually recover and, you know, experience some great results from their medication and from their treatments. But sometimes those fears or those misconceptions can keep people from seeking treatment, and that's really a shame.
The medications have changed. Back in the 50s, it was tranquilizers. Mm-hmm. In the 60s, it was LSD. And in the 70s, we started getting into more of the pharmaceuticals, I guess, in a sense. But one thing I'm always leery of pharmaceutical companies is they don't give you a cure. They give you something you have to take the rest of your life.
Well, mental illnesses, like many other physical illnesses, are chronic. You know, diabetes is a chronic illness, asthma is a chronic illness, MS is a chronic illness. You know, sometimes heart disease is a chronic illness, high blood pressure. Mental illness is really no different. It's something that you probably will have to treat the rest of your life. But sometimes it's with medication, sometimes it's with therapy, sometimes it's a combination of those things. But also people really need to understand that it's those lifestyle factors also. We hear about if someone has high cholesterol, they say you need to start walking and you need to start watching your diet. And it's the same thing for a mental illness because it is also a physical illness. So we look at, are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting some exercise? Are you eating a nutritious, healthy diet? Because all of those things have an impact on your brain chemistry as well.
What should we be eating for good mental health?
Pretty much the same thing they tell you all the time for good physical health. You know, the that Mediterranean diet and the, you know, the limiting your processed foods and your sugars and your fatty oils and things like that, and you know, going for the protein and the vegetables and the fruits and, you know, just that healthy diet that they talk about all the time that's sometimes hard for us to follow.
I heard Dr. Oz, I think, yesterday talk about having an egg in the morning and something you need zinc, I guess, we're good, mm-hmm. you know, being alert
right.
and those types of things. But you mentioned sleep. A lot of people, you know, think they can get by on 5 hours sleep every night. But sleep deprivation is actually a tool used to break people down.
Yeah,
I mean, that was true with my dad. And Wendy brought up a good point about, you know, when dad's been successful with managing his mental illness, it's been a whole confluence of things he has to do, which includes, you know, regulating your sleep. Getting into good, restful sleep is really important to maintain good mental health. And so when dad's been successful, it's always been, you know, using and taking the medications as prescribed, getting exercise, eating well, sleeping, and enjoying his life.
I think everybody sometime during their lifetime gets into a traumatic situation, whether it's a divorce or a loss of a loved one. Or there's even a support group now where people lose their pets. That brings up a point. I think pets are good for mental health too, aren't they?
They can be, and they're increasingly recognized as therapy animals for people who live with mental illness. Just that ability to connect with something or someone and to give and receive affection. Mental illness can be very isolating for people. Sometimes their symptoms have caused them to lose relationships with people that are very important, and people get very lonely. And oftentimes a pet can be that thing that connects you back to the world again and gives you the confidence to be able to reach out to people again.
I did this program back when we lost a lot of farms back in the 70s because of the bank situation, and we just went through a period not too long ago where people lost their homes, and people are still recovering from a lot of that. You know, how do you prepare yourself for a traumatic situation to keep from going cuckoo, as we call it, and having a nervous breakdown? It's education and communication, like we're talking about right now. Support groups like Penny, I think, is talking about. Tell us about those support groups that you were mentioning before.
We have support groups for people living with mental illness 3 times a week, on Sunday night from 6 to 7:30. Tuesday night from 7 to 8:30. The Sunday night is at First Congregational Church, and the Tuesday night from 7 to 8:30 is at the church at the gate out on 26th West. And then we have one on
Monday
at 3 from 3:30 to 5 at the Avera Living Well Center on Minnesota Avenue. And it's just a support group for people living with mental illness. They can come and share their story, and we talk about issues that we may be having in our lives, you know, whether it be coping skills, problems, or, you know, we're just there to support each other and encourage each other to live healthier.
How many are in the NAMI organization here in Sioux Falls in South Dakota?
Oh, you would have to ask me that. I can't even answer. Hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. You know, I told you we have affiliates in 9 communities, and that would be Sioux Falls, Yankton, Brookings, Watertown, Aberdeen, Huron, Pier, Spearfish, and Rapid City. I think I got all 9 there. And each one of them has a monthly meeting for people to come and talk and learn more about mental illness and support each other. And they also offer some of the programs that NAMI, that we've trained them to do. And so there's support and education in 9 different communities across the state. But we also have a state hotline, you know, people call in and can ask for information. And I wanted to piggyback on something Penny was just saying too. We also just started family support groups. It's the first time that we've had actual NAMI family support groups in South Dakota, just starting this spring. So we're really excited about that because, you know, I mentioned that mental illness can be isolating. It's also isolating for family members of people living with mental illness, and John can probably speak to that too, but also in my family, you know, I remember times when people don't include you, or you know, there's sometimes even almost a shunning that happens because people don't understand and they're afraid of what they don't understand. And so for a family member to talk to another family member that's been there, that's had those types of experiences, we can really be a tremendous support for each other. And that in turn helps us to help our family members and our loved ones.
We mentioned the churches, and faith, I think, is a large part of people with that have mental health, because you do have to, you know, believe something that you can't see.
Right. And you have to have hope.
Mm-hmm. Hope,
I mean,
yeah.
Hope is a tremendous indicator for people on whether or not they're going to recover. You know, do you have an ability to see beyond this moment and to see for a better life for yourself and a better life for your family? And that's one of the things that NAMI does. I've been director for a little over a year, and the word hope just keeps coming back to me because people tell me that. They'll call, and after they've gone to a class or they've been in a support group or they've talked to other people that are living with mental illness, they say, you know, now I have hope that things can get better for us. And that's so important because the evidence is there. Treatment works, and there is hope for a better life. Mental illness is not necessarily a death sentence or a doom and gloom diagnosis that, you know, my life is over. Just the opposite. Many people find a lot of brightness and a lot of, a lot of hope. And good things happen in recovery as possible.
There's joy in the morning, I think.
That's right.
Now, you mentioned also, I wanted to get back to, you mentioned the family, because the veteran, the Vietnam veteran defined PTSD. They didn't even know what PTSD was. They called it shell shock and pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get over it. But now we know that PTSD is something that the returning veterans really need time and work with for
right.
the rest of their life also.
Right, quite often. You know, the other thing that people need to understand is that mental illnesses are biologically based brain disorders.
Chemistry.
These are not, and sometimes structure. You know, with the new advances in the MRIs that we're able to do of the brain, we can actually see differences in brain structure. And so it's not a choice that someone makes. It's not bad parented or you were raised wrong or a character flaw. These symptoms are caused by physical manifestations of illness in your brain.
As the song goes, there's a fine line between love and hate. And people go crazy when they fall in love, some people think, and they go crazy when they break up, or whichever, too. Everybody, I think, listening would say, well, that doesn't apply to me. I'm not having a mental health problem. But they could tomorrow. You could have a motorcycle accident, a car accident, and a concussion, or your brain could be damaged, and that part too.
Yeah, and the other thing that we need to realize is that heredity plays a big part in these illnesses. And so what researchers are really believing now is that a person can have the inherited tendency to have mental illness symptoms, but that maybe isn't expressed until a traumatic event happens in their life, a divorce or a loss of job or, you know, some sort of, trauma happens. And then suddenly, it seems like a sudden thing, they have symptoms that maybe were there all along, but just not expressed. So I don't think any of us can really say, well, that will never happen to me or that's never happened in my family. Because the truth is, the statistics tell us 1 in 4 people. Well, if you really take a look at that, that's over 150,000 South Dakotans right there. And we all know someone. And it could happen to any of us. It's just I think once we accept that, then we will be not so frightened of that reality and more willing to go to our doctors and say, you know, I've been having some troubling thoughts, or I've been having a real hard time with my daily activities, and I don't know why. Things are just don't feel right to me. We're much more likely to go to our doctor and say, oh, I've been having this problem with my leg or you know, something like that, or my back is hurting. Well, why don't we go to our doctors and talk about our mental health as well? Maybe have a mental health checkup. May would be a good time to do that for Mental Health Awareness Month. Talk to your doctor about how you're feeling, and something can probably be done to help you.
What are some of the signs that people can use to see if maybe they should go to the doctor?
I think you need to look at maybe differences, first of all, you know, whether it's in yourself or your child or your aging parent, you know, what's different? Are you still taking joy in your life? Are you still enjoying your life experiences? Do you have the type of energy that you're used to having? Are your relationships going along about like they always do? Or are you suddenly finding yourself angry a lot or are very, very sad or just have no energy and it's really hard to get through the day? Those types of things that are different for you, those are those little red flags that you need to pay attention to, especially if they last for more than a couple of weeks.
It's not your grandfather's mental health. It's not Jack Nicholson in The Shining or The Cuckoo's Nest or the Agent Orange movies that Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
Movies that people remember, especially my age. Maybe the young people don't even remember them at all. But mental health has changed a lot in the last 30 years.
Yeah. The treatments have changed dramatically, and it's night and day. You know, even some of the same treatments that we were using before, we've improved them so much, and the medications have improved. We have so many more choices, and the therapies have changed. We know much more about how people's minds work and how relationships are healthy or unhealthy and how we can help people to achieve those healthy relationships. So it's really changed an awful lot. But I look back at my own family and I look at my grandfather and I think, I wonder if he had some depression going on. Mental illness has been around since the dawn of time because it's an illness of your brain and people have illnesses. But how we look at it and how we treat it has changed dramatically.
And you mentioned children too, are hereditary. But a lot of babies are born with mothers who take crack or cocaine. Those babies are born, you know, with addictions that it's not their fault.
Right.
And I think people need to know more when they're pregnant. There's things that, vitamins, this and that can affect you.
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't think we even really realize how some of those substances affect a developing fetus, but certainly they're very vulnerable to a lot of factors. But I want to point out, I think it's really important to help people get past the blame and get past if this is something that you did or something that your mother did or something that you caused. Blaming just invites shame for people, and I would rather just have us focus on that we're all here on this planet, on this human spectrum, and we have to take care of each other, we have to take care of ourselves, and it's okay to talk about behavioral health. It's okay to bring it up. It's okay to say I'm having problems or my child is having problems. We just need to sort of move past that shame, address it as part of the human experience of life, and then we will see more people in recovery. And the things that Penny does with her support groups and with going out and talking to people about her illness, that's the type of thing that brings it out into the light.
You mentioned your father, and I think it's important that you tell us that affected you as a child, actually the rest of your life. So really, when you mentioned family support, that's important. One person affects not only them, but the family and everyone around them.
Well, it does. And, I want to encourage people to piggyback on what Wendy was saying, is that it's okay to talk about this. It wasn't until I started talking to other people who had family members with mental illness that I'd met, at the hospital or in finding them on the internet or tapping into NAMI to talk about these issues. It was at that point that I started to heal, to get some help. And it wasn't my dad's fault that he has bipolar. That's a process. But there is support out there, and NAMI offers some incredible resources for families here in Sioux Falls. There's a family-to-family connection class that's a 12-week class, Wendy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the support groups as well. It is incredibly, I want to use the word liberating, to be able to sit down and talk to another member of a family member about what you've gone through and what resources there are and how they can get help and what medications worked and do you know a good therapist and all those things that happen and those connections that you make with working with other families and people with mental illness are so important.
Penny, tell us about your support groups again, because a lot of people can come out to the walk and talk to you out there casually or whichever about NAMI, but the support groups, getting in a support group, there's some people don't want to be seen walking into a support group because of a stigma, in a sense. But that's getting better, isn't it?
I think so. People aren't as ashamed. The groups that I go to, we're able to talk freely about what's going on. We're able to talk freely about the therapy we're going through or coping skills classes that we've taken. We don't specifically talk about medications, but we talk about how well it's working, or the people that I've met, you know, going through the process that John talked about, process of acceptance. Some are at acceptance and some are having a hard time, and some have been just diagnosed, or some of us have, like myself, I was diagnosed in 93, but until I made lifestyle changes, I didn't start processing it until 1999. So I was diagnosed way before I did anything about it, but once I got through the acceptance part, then I was able to do something about it. And I agree, it's nobody's fault, you know, and it's okay today for me to have...
Those who are that have the knowledge or been through it have the responsibility to help those yet to come. I mean, you have to be in the shoes to know and understand the language.
And that's, NAMI programs are built on that. They're built on that lived experience of family members and individuals living with family, living with mental illness. So, you know, we can help people that aren't as far along as we are. Everyone who volunteers for NAMI or who works for NAMI has that personal connection. And there's a safety in that. There's a security and a trust level that you have when you're talking to people because you know they understand. And we're able to help people that maybe have never wanted to talk about it before, because we can say, yeah, I've been there, I understand.
Is there a difference between mental health and mental disability?
Sometimes a mental disability, I think what you're probably referring to would be a developmental disability.
Like autism?
Well, autism is a whole different thing. You know, as far as a mental disability, you know, sometimes you'll have people who have both a mental illness and a developmental disability, but they're not the same things. They're two different conditions. Mental illnesses have more to do with behaviors and thought processes. They don't have anything to do with intelligence or your ability to think or your ability to reason. They just have have to do with sometimes you have a skewed reality or a skewed reasoning process, and your feelings can be much more intense or even absent.
I've heard it defined. It's the difference between losing your keys, not knowing where they are, or trying to remember what the keys are for.
Yeah. Okay.
As a part of it, the aspect of Alzheimer's. The more we find out about that, the more we find out about how the brain works, and
right.
The more we know that. The more we don't know, actually. But Alzheimer's has really helped, the research in that has helped develop quite a few things for mental health.
It really has. And if you look at, I talked earlier about that DSM-5 criteria that the medical field uses for mental illnesses. Actually, Alzheimer's disease, dementia-related diseases, and autism spectrum disorder do fall under that DSM-5 for mental health conditions. There's a lot that we still don't know, though. There really is.
We're running out of time, but the walk is Saturday, May 17th. Can they still sign up tomorrow?
You can sign up the day before, or you can just come out on May 17th and join us. We will take donations even after the walk. If you don't get it together and get out there, you can still support us. But you can go online again at namiwalks.org and register with us. If you have trouble registering or doing things on the computer and you want some help with that, just give us a call, 271-1871, and we'll help you with that. We would love to see you on Saturday, May 17th. We'd love to have your support.
And you're in the phone book, too.
John, the walk, we're going to have activities for the whole family that morning. There will be a lot of things for kids and for families, and it's going to be early, and so there will be plenty of time to have some fun, walk with us, and still get out for the afternoon if you have graduation responsibilities or anything. It's really from about 8:30 to 10:30 that morning, and it'll be a lot of fun.
It clears your mind to go out and have a walk.
That's
Wendy
right.
Giving, Executive Director, Penny Hall, volunteer, and John Williams, family member, NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. I want to thank you for being with us on Forum.
Thanks for inviting us.